I think I just wanted to touch base with you on the recalculation. How are things going with getting the demographics figured out? And is it just one person doing that work, or do you have like a team?
So that's a good question. I have consulted with city management, and we have decided that before we put any more information out to the public, that we would like a non-biased data professional to look at our data and help us interpret it and advise to make sure that we don't have to keep correcting things. Because, you know, I understand the pulling out of some of the positive test results that you could potentially need to pull that number out from other places, such as the total number of tests administered, because it throws off your infection rate. So how many tests did you conduct? How many were positives? And if you're going to throw out a particular data set and say this doesn't count, then what else are you throwing off about your data set? And so although many of us have had some biostatistics courses and statistical classes in grad school and things like that, it really is just a good idea to get a non-biased person, someone from the outside, to come in and look at it and validate what you're doing. And so we want to take enough time. I've already reached out to some people. And so people are going to be coming to look at our data set and see if they have the skill set to do that. So hopefully throughout the course of today, we'll kind of get some people in, let them look at some data and decide whether that's something they're able to take on or not.
So what do you, I realize that this is a process, but what do you think the timeline will be on that? Because once they look at it and decide if they can do it, then the work has to start. How long do you estimate that might take?
I mean, I would hope that we could get something in place and be able to hammer it all out next week. But I don't know how long that takes for somebody who does it all the time. Maybe they look at it and they can immediately say, this is what you need to do. This is how you adjust things to make sure that you're not throwing off your data set. But I don't know. So my time frame may be very different from theirs. I would hope that next week we could have something, but it just totally depends on what the professional says.
When you removed the prisoners' numbers and the serologic numbers, on Wednesday the new total was 206, and then yesterday it was 207. So is that the total of active cases or the total of all cases?
So yeah, we did get that question a lot. And I think Mari might have gone back and clarified. It was one additional positive. I know we had been posting active cases versus total number of cases cumulative. And so I think what it's been pared down to right now is just the total cumulative cases and the total number of tests that have been conducted.
I'm sure that you can understand that all of these changes to the reporting and the different ways that you're displaying in graphics and charts and active cases versus cumulative cases have been confusing for some people. And I think it's also undermining the confidence in the reporting and causing some in the community to become skeptical of the reporting.
Right. Right.
What message do you have to the people who think there's something going on?
So I absolutely acknowledge that this is not ideal. And I continue to say, I hope that in all of this, and everybody who is having to do a completely new job because of COVID, that we all have some grace for each other. But I also understand that there are some people who are just naturally very skeptical. And so all I can say is it's very frustrating to us as well. But some of these mistakes are honest mistakes. You know, you've got data entry people who are entering data. Many of these people are temporary employees. We've borrowed them from other areas. And so we asked them to come in and take over kind of some data entry, and you know, they don't know all the back end pieces that are going on. So for example, with the prisoners, we have a GIS person with the city who has access to the spreadsheet. And every day he goes in and he runs that GIS tracking tool, and it basically throws out, based on the addresses that are entered into that spreadsheet, he'll run that GIS tool to make sure that there are no addresses that fall outside of Taylor County. And so every day he will send a list, well, some days when there are, he will send that list of, these are the addresses that are tracking outside of Taylor County. And so our EPI team will go in and remove them and report them to their home county. What happened with the prisoners was that when the data entry was being entered, they were putting either French Robertson unit or Middleton unit rather than an actual physical address. And so the GIS tool that we have in place was, did not work. And so it didn't kick those out and didn't notify the other arm of the process. And so, you know, do I wish it hadn't happened? Of course. It would be, make things much easier. And I do understand the constant changing. So some of those kind of came about organically as well. When we were reporting negative cases and pending and all of that, as testing really ramped up, a lot of the testing sites were no longer sending us information about negative tests. And so it made sense to drop that because we're not receiving that information anymore. And so you had people saying, well, your number of negative tests, you know, is not climbing. This doesn't make sense. Well, we're not being reported that information because the testing sites are not required to report that. Before it got too big, it was helpful to have that information because we would pass those addresses of suspected cases over to our dispatch so that they could flag addresses so that if they had to go respond to that address, they could, you know, make sure that they were in PPE. So again, as that got bigger, we dropped that. And then we would say, well, you know, this number of pending, that doesn't really say anything to the public because you don't know whether that pending is a positive or a negative. So what could we start reporting that is more meaningful? And so as we would have these conversations about what would the public like to know, what would be more meaningful, and then as we would get requests, can you start reporting on this? And we would try to be responsive to those things. Again, you know, trying to be helpful, but I think with that constant changing, in hindsight, I absolutely, you know, understand that you pick a method and you stick with it. And so it's great that people have lots of suggestions of what they would like to see, and us, in an attempt to coordinate those things and incorporate them into our reporting, has created confusion. So again, with bringing a professional on board, maybe giving us a little bit more professional advice to say this is how it would make sense to do it, and then we stick with that. So we'll definitely look at doing things a little bit differently. But again, it's our first pandemic, as it is for everyone. We are learning as we go.
So are the people that you're bringing in to take a look at the data set, are they local people? Are they regional people? Can you give me an idea of who you're asking for the input from?
So it's local people, and we're reaching out to universities.
And then back to the serologic tests, one of the things that I have just generally been curious about was why the State Health Department of State Health Services wanted those pulled out of reporting, what kind of information do you get from the information about those tests, and why is that not good to report?
Well, so when I spoke to the Associate Commissioner of Health for Texas, who is Dave Gruber, he said it was really more about consistent reporting throughout the state. So to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples, everybody needs to be consistent about how they're reporting and what they're reporting for the data to make sense. And I certainly understand that. So because most other health departments, most other jurisdictions do not use serological tests right now, we need to be consistent. So that makes sense. He did make sure that he let me know that he was not asking us to discontinue the use of serology testing, and said that that was completely up to the local health director and the local medical director to make sure we are using the best tools we have for our community. And so we understand that if you look at these serology tests, you can look at them from two different perspectives. You can look at them from the healthcare and the clinical aspect and say, are they a validated tool to be able to find positive cases of COVID-19? And many of these serology tests are not FDA approved. So the one that we use, it has an emergency use authorization from the FDA, which means that it has not been through the full validation process of FDA approval. But that is the case with many of these things because, again, COVID is so new that there just has not been enough time to do a full evaluation on them. Now, when we brought on the serology test that we've been using, my staff went through a validation process of their own. So they did side-by-side testing. They would do finger stick and use blood from a known positive, and they would also follow that up with a PCR swab. And after that validation process, we saw that we got pretty consistent results with that side-by-side testing. And so we made the decision that it made sense for public health to use those. Now, keep in mind that this is not a diagnostic tool that we are using to suggest a medical treatment. So when the hospitals don't use serology tests right now to diagnose COVID-19, it makes complete sense not for a hospital setting and a clinical setting not to use them. But public health, our patient is the community. So anything that we prescribe or implement based on a positive serology test is not to protect the individual patient, because that patient, our non-pharmaceutical interventions are not going to protect this patient. They're already infectious, or most likely infectious, because the tests are not, as I said, 100% accurate. And so by us prescribing that non-pharmaceutical intervention, which is isolation of the infectious person, you're protecting your community. And so you're using it as a public health surveillance tool rather than a diagnostic tool. So it just depends on which way you're looking at it. I certainly understand the medical community's hesitancy to use them because they are not fully validated. But as public health, because we are not prescribing a specific regimen of treatment, it makes sense for us to use them. And the other thing that I'll mention, what has played a key role in us deciding to continue to use the serology tests is, for example, if you have a person who comes in and they are symptomatic and you suspect them of having COVID-19, and you do that blood test and you get a result within 10 to 15 minutes, you can immediately say to that person, you have tested positive on this serology test. you should go home. You need to isolate yourself from your family and stay isolated. And then, of course, they get looped into case management by one of our medical staff. If, on the other hand, you do a nasal pharyngeal swab, which is the PCR test, and you tell that person, okay, you will get your result in 2 to 4 days. In the meantime, you need to treat yourself as if you're positive. You should isolate from your family and you should not have any contact with anyone. The rate of compliance, I can assure you, is very low. So what they hear is, you've told me I'm not positive yet, and so I need to make sure that I go take care of everything I need to take care of before you actually tell me that I'm positive. And so you have an infectious, a potentially infectious person running around trying to take care of things in anticipation of being locked up for the next, 10 days or so. So that is our rationale behind continuing to use the serology tests for public health purposes.
So you can't officially count the serology tests as part of Taylor County's numbers. Mm-hmm. But now that you've had to remove those tests and the inmate tests from the overall count, when you look at Taylor County's numbers, what is your perspective on the spread of COVID-19 in this area?
So if you look at who's actually positive within the community, we've had a significant number of people who are part of group settings. So 94 prisoners, that's a significant number of people. Once it gets into those group settings, you look at kind of the DRI, the Abimar, those are outbreaks. If you look at the community as a whole, and of course those people are part of the community except for the prisoners, but we did have actually some employees of both prisons who tested positive as well. So that does have an impact within our community because those workers will come out into our community and potentially infect others. But again, if you're looking at it from just a bird's eye view to say what has been the impact on our community, I would say that the non-pharmaceutical interventions that the community has worked so hard at doing have really worked. The goal of these efforts was to be able to get to the end of this pandemic and look back and say, for our community anyway, it wasn't as bad as we thought it might be. And if we can say that, I would say that as a community, we've done a really good job. That doesn't mean that it's over. We still have to be diligent about doing those non-pharmaceutical intervention things. It's important to keep a social distance of at least 6 feet because the science behind how it spreads is droplets. And so those droplets can travel up to 6 feet, if not a little bit more, depending on whether you're talking or sneezing or coughing. So that's the primary way that it spreads, and by keeping distances and disinfecting surfaces, we can continue to keep our infection rates lower. So, it has not been as bad as we anticipated it could be, but we still have a long ways to go. We don't know when this will end. Of course, everyone's hoping that the warmer weather, this will act like flu, and the warmer weather will kind of have this go dormant, but we don't know yet.
Since the governor has taken steps to start opening businesses again and getting the economy back to work, do you think that has been a subconscious cue to the public that things are improving and maybe they're not even consciously aware of it, but they're taking more chances? I feel like I'm not seeing as many people wearing masks. I feel like I see older people wearing masks, but a lot of younger people are just kind of going about their business. They've got their kids in the grocery carts. They've got no mask on. They're not paying attention to signs on the floors. This is what I've observed. So are you concerned that people are starting to return to their normal behaviors too quickly out of a false sense of security?
Well, of course, I think that we're all a little bit concerned, again, because it's just an unknown at this point. We don't know if there will be a second wave. Many of the experts say that there will be. When will that second wave come? Will it be in the fall? Are we out of the woods right now for the summer? These are just things we don't know. And so I do think that there's a general consensus. Everybody wants to go back to their normal lives, me included. I realized that there were so many things we all took for granted. And so you really have to balance all of that with, yes, we do have to open back up as a community. Economic impact of COVID-19 can be just as detrimental as the health impact. And so I understand that. And we do need to look at opening up, but we need to do it as safely as possible. So even though you may have a little bit more freedom to go into restaurants and gather for social gatherings and church services and things like that, this is a time to be even more diligent about those basic things that we can all still continue to do. Keep distances, make sure that you're disinfecting surfaces, and wash your hands. Even if that's all you're willing to do and you're not willing to wear a mask or do anything else, even if all you do is wash your hands, this will help significantly, so we can continue to be proactive as we open back up. Abilene.
Okay, my last question is just whether the Abilene-Taylor County Public Health District is back to work full time. Are you open to the public yet? If not, when?
So our main health department is not open to the public yet. We have not started our routine services yet. We have 15 or 16 additional staff members on top of our normal staff members, all continuing to respond to COVID. And so it's not looking like we're going to be able to get back to normal business just yet for public health. And so I think with our building, we will be consistent with whatever the city decides in officially opening up other city buildings like City Hall. And so I think it looks like a target date is May 18th. And so we'll just be consistent with whatever the city decides to open up other city buildings.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I do know you're busy, and I appreciate you making the time to answer these questions.
Sure. Thank you very much.